What's up, everyone? Thank you for tuning into the Bonus Point podcast brought to you by Macro Butter, Whale Bird Kombucha, and Osteo Strong LA. I'm your host, TJ Olsen, joined by usual guest analyst, James Tesserero. But with Hala out this week, I thought I'd reach out to someone who can provide a bit of a New Zealand perspective to the conversation. So I reached out to my good mate from Northern Rugby Union, Josh Hyde. Welcome in, Josh. How you doing, brother?
Good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, good, mate. It's good to see your face. It's been a long time since I've seen you. So it's a bit of background for our listeners and viewers at home. I met Josh a few years when he was the manager for the Auckland Women's Storm and Thunder campaign. But you've now moved north and you're now a community rugby manager and a women's high-performance rugby manager. So how was the transition like going from the big city up to Northland? It's a beautiful town up there.
Yeah, it's not bad up here. So I obviously went from living in Auckland, working alongside you with the Thunder, and moved from a town of 1.8 million people to a small town in the right up the top of Northland called Maunganui, and it got a population of about 800 people.
I didn't think it was that small, man.
It's tiny. So I kind of cover a large region of space. So my where I drive to is from my most southern part of my region is about 3 hours away, and my most northern is right at the top of the North Island. So it's about 3.5 hour drive from Maunganui. So it's a fair amount of travel that goes into it. Loving the day. It's been a big transition, but yeah, can't beat it. Living paradise.
Putting a lot of miles on the car. No, that sounds good. But James, lots of footy action today to watch. The Crusaders Blues, the Major League Rugby kicking off, Six Nations. What was your favourite spectacle today after such a packed day?
Mate, I really enjoyed the LA Giltinis match in the MLR. The quality wasn't kind of top notch, but just so much build up, so much hype around it. Getting to watch kind of Gitto and Ashley Cooper dust off their boots and play professional rugby again, I thought that was a bit of a buzz. So I probably have to say that was the highlight.
Yeah, I think a few people were messaging me going, it's a bit of an interesting transition to go from watching MLR to going to watch Super Rugby or something like that. It's where you've got like five drop balls in a span of 5 minutes. But I agree. I think it's a great day for LA and California rugby in general, just to get some professional rugby and seeing a guy that I've grown up watching, hating for a lot of my years in Matt Gitto. When I'd watch a lot of All Blacks games, it was good to watch him play for a team that I could root for. But let's get stuck into talking about the Super Rugby and talk about the Waratahs and the Rebels first. The Waratahs, as you know, James, are having a rough go in the Super Rugby AU comp and have suffered another loss to the Rebels. But I want to talk about their gameplay, but more specifically around their mentality, around their decision-making. So when teams start to suffer losses, some players and coaches, they start to play it safe a little bit so they don't suffer another one. And a good example is there was an overthrow in the game in the lineout by the Rebels, and the ball was caught by a Waratahs player, but rather than taking space or getting over the advantage line and trying to attack, he kicked the ball away. And that's something that I'm trying to sense or trying to see with the Waratahs, and trying to see if they're playing it a bit safe. So I know you follow the Waratahs quite closely, James, and obviously you're conscious of the score and what happens. So do you think the Waratahs are worrying too much about the pressure of the scoreboard or playing it safe rather than just playing and letting the score work itself out?
Man, I think it's a team under pressure at all, from the top to the bottom, and like the coach is under a heap of pressure. The senior players, if you can call them senior, are under pressure. Mm-hmm. And they're making bad decisions. So, like, pressure does lead to bad decisions. There's an element of panic in a lot of their play. There's aimless kicking. Kicking can be a good strategy if you kick well and if you kick at the right time. But at the moment, the Tars seem to kick because there isn't really another plan. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. It's kind of the play is poor. It's like the match managers on the team are not really putting the ball in the right places on the field. Some of that comes down to inexperience. Some of it comes down to just being on the worst side of the forward battle every week, and that kind of has all sorts of flow-ons.
Yeah, and I think you go to an interesting point that you alluded to with that comment is they everybody has to understand that they are the youngest team in Super Rugby AU and Super Rugby in general. So I think that has a holding hand into it. But the Rebels, on the other hand, had some great gameplay. They looked very excited to be back in Melbourne. Obviously, it's their first game being back in Melbourne since the whole COVID pandemic hit. It's the Rebels were copying a lot of criticism as well when they played the Brumbies and the Reds for taking too many opportunities for kicking for points, not backing their set piece, playing a bit too tight. But in this game, they were pressuring very well on defense, forcing a penalty or a scrum and launching strike moves off that platform and looking very deadly by playing expansive style of rugby. So they were getting a lot of people involved. So, Josh, do you believe that the Rebels, could they be true contenders for that AU title if they play this brand of footy?
Oh, I think so. I mean, if you look at traditionally how the Crusaders play, if you take the Crusaders model as almost like the benchmark within Super Rugby as it used to stand, playing for points and playing for the win, it's how you win rugby. If you're just there to wow the fans and score a whole heap of tries and make a whole lot of errors, you're never going to actually make it to the end, to win the competition. I mean, that's what we saw from the Hurricanes and the Highlanders quite a bit, you know, in their early days. So, I mean, it's a smart way to play. I thought Matt Tamua had an awesome game the other night. I mean, he's played really well this season. He looks like he's kind of back to the Matt Tamua that kind of was back in a few years ago before he headed off overseas. One player that stood out for me, and I think, you know, I mean, having seen him play club rugby in Auckland and play for Hawke's Bay over here in the Mitre 10 Cup is Stacey Illy, and obviously he's over there now with the Rebels, and he played like I've never seen him play before. So something's obviously going right within that system that is giving them, you know, just that knowledge around gameplay, just being more tactically sound to actually put themselves in a position to win. And so I truly believe they are probably my favorites to win Super Rugby AU and probably the favorites of quite a few people. So
yeah, I think Dave Vessels has got something going on there. Coach, he's got the right mindset for a lot of the players. I think a lot of the players are buying into it. I don't know if I would go into it saying they would be my favorites, but I definitely feel like they definitely are in contention if they can play this style of footy. The Waratahs, they have a tough matchup again next week against this very strong Reds team. So I feel for you, James. It's going to be a rough week. But with that in mind, let's segue to talk about the Reds and the Western Force game, because the Reds, they got another victory against the Western Force, but it was a tight one. It was a really close match, and I think the Western Force were giving them a long, long, hard battle. But a guy we've spoken about constantly on this podcast is Hunter Paisami. And James, you mentioned when we were speaking about it in our chat that you think Paisami is basically the form back player for Super Rugby AU and also could take the cake for form Super Rugby AU player altogether. So my two-part question for you is can you tell me why you think Paisami deserves that honour, and who do you think else is in consideration for the title of a Super Rugby AU player?
Yeah, right. Well, I think I think Paisami right now is the standout, and he's getting a little bit better every match. And he seems to have grown in confidence a lot since getting consistent international matches. He was always a strong ball carrier and a big whacker in defense. He's adding all sorts of different kind of more subtle skill elements to his game. He scored two tries on Friday night. At least one of them was kind of quite individual. He's ball playing a fair bit from the 13 spot. He's still whacking guys and making a lot of dominant tackles. And he kind of put that little left-footed kick through to win the game against the Brumbies a couple of weeks ago. So he's kind of every match he's either scoring, setting tries up, dominating in defence. The opposition backline has always got an eye out for him, and that's very disruptive. And just every touch looks quality and looks confident, and he seems to be growing every single match. So I think he's probably the form player in the country.
Yeah, and who do you think would rival him in that? So obviously you've got a lot of talented players around Australia, but do you think Paisami's in the league of his own with the arsenal that he's grown, or do you think that someone else can compete for him?
Yeah, putting me on the spot, mate. I don't think there's anyone else that's kind of week in week out has been amazing. Corabetti looks very good, but I think he had a few quiet games to start the season. So in terms of kind of week in, week out, I think probably he's right up there. And then the Brumbies have got like a handful of consistent players that have been very good most matches, but no one really jumping out in that regard the same way Paisami is.
Okay, yeah. Josh, I'll put you on the spot because before we move on to our force game. Is there anyone you're seeing in the Super Rugby AU that you think would be the form player or basically like the guy who would be the face of Super Rugby AU?
To be fair, I probably haven't seen enough of Super Rugby AU in terms of whole games to really have much of a say. But, I mean, Hunter Paisami's probably one of the ones that is right up there. But you could probably credit a lot of his consistency and ability around his partnership with Jordan Pataia at centre as well. Like they just combine so well. They really work off each other. Probably having an experienced 10 can help alongside that as well. So he's probably got a few little cogs around him that help him be consistent and at that level. So yeah, that's probably all I can add.
Yeah, I think that's something that we're going to talk about later when we talk about David Havili, when we talk about the Crusaders, as James made a good point, is when you've got someone like Richie Mwanga and you've got Goodhue on either side of you, I think you have a strong ability to succeed. But we'll move on to the Force. And in the past, the Force were great rivals against the Reds because they, out of 12 times, they have beaten the Reds 8 times out of those 12. So I heard Michael Checker, he made a pretty interesting comment saying, if the Force are able to lure teams into playing this style of rugby, slow down the breakdown, getting into an arm wrestle battle rather than getting into a flowy type of game, they're able to force teams to into that section and just hold on to them until they get out of it. So Josh, the Force kept the score tight but weren't lucky enough to get the win. What should the Force focus on next week to try and get the win against the Brumbies?
Well, I mean, in terms of if you look at it from a statistics point of view, they had everything on their side to win the game. So it probably just comes down to their system. Maybe they need to actually relook at it. I mean, they got turned over a lot. They weren't able to offload or anything. So in terms of their keeping the ball alive while they had all the position, they weren't moving the ball probably enough. And probably there was a few skip passes and stuff in the game the other night that I thought probably didn't need to go. So holding the ball a bit tighter, but then also just shoring up on defense. So it's probably a system issue. They actually need to work out where they're going and what they want to play. Do they want to play wide or do they want to play up the middle? And how are they going to do that? It could be as simple as bringing it back to the dreaded 1-3-3-1 system, something to just get them moving down the tram lines and as a team. So they don't need to be flashy like anyone else. They just need to play like the Force and hold on to that pill, but move forward always.
Yeah, I think in previous years, you have seen highlights of them where they're similar to a Crusaders. Obviously, the Crusaders are more well-known for running that 2-4-2 setup, but once they get into the groove and they hold their setup, they don't need to do too many things flashy. Obviously, in later years, they've gotten crazy backs that can do flashy things. But once they are able just to rely on their setup, they just keep moving forward. So just before we move on the Super Rugby AU stuff, James, I'll come to you and then Josh, get you to round us off. Any plays or any players that you really enjoyed in this round?
Mate, I can't believe you talked about the Tars Rebels match and didn't mention Tamua's chip and chase.
I was gonna get to it, but it totally slipped my mind because I think that is basically in the running for try of the year. It has to be. It's that, especially with I think it was Nunga Wasi, he was coming across and Tamua was still able to secure that ball for the try. Yeah. I think it's definitely got to be in the running for it.
And it was also quite important in the context of the match. It was 2 minutes before half time, and it made 16-0 into 21-0.
Yeah.
And like the Tars were kind of just hanging in there and were potentially, like the coach probably had some positive things to say to the Tars if they'd gone in 16-0 and we're in this is how we claw our way back in. But a try like that, which was freakish 2 minutes before half time to make it 21-0, would have been absolutely deflating and probably finished the match. And it was a spectacular chip and chase. So that was play of the weekend.
Oh man, shout out to State High boy Matty Tamua. Love that guy when he's able to get flashy like that. But Josh,
I also should mention that when he regained, he was on the treadmill and he's lost a few steps in pace.
Yeah.
And mate, there were props nearly running him down, but he did enough to score it.
He's getting up there in rugby age. I mean, like he can't hold that speed forever. I mean, he's still doing all right.
Yeah.
Josh, any final plays over the Super Rugby AU weekend that you reckon were standout?
Not that really come to mind. You guys have kind of nailed them, the ones that sort of stood out for me. But one comment I did want to make was the Waratahs just look really small. They look like Rob Penny just run them for 6 months and hasn't actually bulked them up at all. I mean,
yeah,
just from personal experience, knowing Sam Caird, who's just moved over to the Waratahs from Northland, he just looks like he's dropped about 5-6 kilos, and that really does matter. You know, especially in the engine room. So, I mean, to me, they just looked small, and they were getting bumped off every contact. And, you know, there was I think he got bumped off by Reese Hodge. And I'm like, mate, he's a 12. He should be putting him on his ass every time. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, maybe it's looking at Rob Penny and how he's running them and how he prepared them. You know, are they ready to play Super Rugby, or are they more down in that domestic competition space?
Mm-hmm. So you're saying the S&C coach is going into the room and hiding all the protein, hiding all the creatine, and just getting him on a nice leafy green diet.
Yeah, it could be, but I mean, like Rob Penny, obviously being an ex Canterbury coach, you know, did he bring that kind of, you know, they're always known to be the fit and fast, but able to survive contact. So has he tried to replicate an environment that just wasn't ready or wasn't suited to the game?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Hala on previous podcasts, he's spoken about that with the Chiefs, is having Gatland come over and coaching in the UK for so many years and trying to implement a system that may not work or a lot of players won't relate to. So I think that's definitely a good point. Is James, do you think there would be any validity to that, or do you think that it's just something that is just a rare occurrence?
I think Josh is spot on that the Tars are small and young and they're getting bashed. And it's very, very cliche, but if you kind of, if your forwards are getting bashed and not getting any momentum in attack in any areas of the game, the rest of the game comes very, very hard, and that's a lot of what you're seeing. So forwards are getting bashed, backs are inexperienced, a little bit of panic. We're small and we're young, and that none of that stuff is conducive to winning games.
Okay, fair enough. We'll segue.
Yeah. Just to, like, you know, from another example of, you know, maybe the, like, you know, we over here in New Zealand, we want to replicate the Canterbury system everywhere we go because it's obviously been so successful. You know, they win all the championships. We can't take anything off them. And now they've sent it up to Tasman, who are winning everything now. But it's happened before with a Canterbury or Crusaders coach going to Australia and not being able to find that success because something just doesn't work. So obviously we saw it in Robbie Dean. So, I mean, maybe just Canterbury and Australia just don't mix together.
So I think you're spot on there, and most knowledgeable Australian rugby folks see the same thing. So just transplanting a champion coach out of a system which sets him up to win and dropping him in a Australian environment where none of those conditions exist doesn't mean you're going to be a winning team. And in some cases that works conversely. So like Robbie Dean's probably encountered things that he was less prepared for than an Australian coach. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So no, that makes sense.
He'd had ideal conditions. He'd had a talent advantage. He'd had amazing systems underpinning everything he'd done. So in many ways that made him less prepared than some of our domestic coaches.
I think a good example, it's a bit of a step down, but George Simpkins, he's a pretty well-known coach around New Zealand. He was one of my mentors for a couple of years when I moved back to New Zealand, and he was the person who told me that exactly is you can't come in and try and replicate a system, or you can't just go in and go, I want the team to play like a Super Rugby team, let's just train like that. As you have to analyze your players, and you have to analyze your support staff, you have to analyze everything, you go through the ABCD protocol. If you've got a bunch of B grade players and then a few C's and then one A, that's the system you need to work with. You need to create around what you have, not trying to create a system around what you don't have. So I think you guys are both spot on with that. So hopefully the Waratahs can turn it around, try and find their own style of footy. But let's segue into something that I like talking about, and that's the Chiefs winning. So this game was incredible. I was stoked about this. I was happy they didn't come away with getting the the record for having the most losses in New Zealand history, because I probably would have fainted if that happened. But I saw things that I never thought I'd see. I saw Tokioho come off and bump off Adi Savia. Never thought I'd see that. A crossfield kick in the Hurricanes' own 22 off a full arm penalty. Never thought I'd see that. And locks who are able to step backs. Never seen that in my life. It's something that's incredible. So the game was a tough fought battle, and it was very action packed. A lot of tries, a lot of interesting plays. But to be honest, like, even though they got the win, I was very disappointed in my Chiefs, because there were moments where we thought we could have been blowing out the Hurricanes, but every time we got momentum, our discipline and our support play was atrocious. It was just awful. We couldn't support our own rucks. We were just getting penalties all over the place. Still happy we got the win, but it was awful. So credit to the Chiefs, who came back from a 26-7 win at halftime. So with that in mind, let's talk about the Chiefs first. So Caleb Trask is a player for the Chiefs. I was pretty tough on last year because I wanted to see more of Aaron Cruden. He's been a standout player for the Chiefs and around the world for years. But ever since that Māori All Blacks game where they played the Moana Pacifica, I saw Trask in kind of a different light, and I thought he could hold his own with some of the best players in the Southern Hemisphere. But again, when he plays for the Chiefs, I just didn't like the look of him. He just made a lot of different decisions. He was under pressure, and when he gets a lot of pressure, he cracked. But as soon as Chase Tiatia came on for Caleb Trask and they pushed McKenzie to 10, two tries came in 5 minutes. So I don't know if that's a coincidence or if that's something that style works for the Chiefs. So Josh, I'll come to you first. If you were Clayton McMillan, who do you like for that number 10 jersey? Would it be Trask, Gatland? Would you push McKenzie into 10 and put Tiatia at fullback? What would you do personally?
Trask. I rate Trask. I think he's a great player. He obviously played quite a bit of 15 last year. Bryn Gatland by far is their best 10 that they've got in the system. But Trask is not too far behind. McKenzie, I just think he's just so, like, he does great things, but he's just so erratic in his play. So, like, last night he cost them how many times and how many tries did he miss the last tackle on or give little effort? So, you know, maybe it's more of like, you know, he's such a great player and it's hard to say drop him. But, you know, I do believe Chase Tiatia is probably their best option at fullback at the moment. And then probably looking at slot. But at the same time, you know, I think, you know, while Trask didn't look that great last night, there's other factors around it. Like, you know, Quintupai is a catch and run player. Antonina Brown obviously likes to get involved at first receiver a bit as well. But, I mean, personally, this is me going to have a dig. I just don't like Brad Weber. You know, I think that he runs too much. He plays too far off the ball. So he often can take all the time away from a team. Especially there was a couple of times last night where they had really good set plays set up, and you could see there was one where they had Jonah Lowe up and everyone else deep, and it was clearly going to be a crossfield kick, and Rayasi was right up on Jonah Lowe, so he was always going to get in behind, and then Brad Weber, he took and dummied through, and then they were turned over. So, you know, I mean, you know, like, I like Tahuti Orangi, but, you know, I mean, obviously he is second fiddle to him, but yeah, I think Gatland probably commands a bit more respect from Weber, whereas Trask is obviously still coming through. But I'm going to chuck a third name in here, or fourth name, sorry, who I'd like to see in the
this will be interesting.
In the Chiefs setup. And he's contracted to the Chiefs. He's just contracted to Northland, but Rivers Reihana, he's an up-and-coming team.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is. He's got some skill to him, and I truly believe that he probably deserves a crack in there as well. I'd love to see him in the Chiefs jersey this year because of what he can offer in terms of he's a serviceable 10. He plays with a lot of time, and he's quick off the mark. So he could probably unlock a bit of that their offense. So yeah, I think the Chiefs have probably got a few decisions to make around what their team looks like, but I don't think it centers just around the 10. I think it's around the whole chemistry of that back line.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I've gone on record that I reckon over Brad Weber, I'd like Triple T at halfback. I think he just provides more to their style of footy, and I just like him more in general. I've loved him in the Māori All Blacks. I've loved him in Mitre 10 Cup. He provides a lot at that halfback position, but it's it's something where I agree with you. There's not going to be one thing around the 10 jersey that's just going to fix everything. But I'm personally a Bryn Gatland fan. I believe he's the best option at 10. I like McKenzie at 15. So hopefully we'll be able to see that more because I believe they'd have a good flow. But Truss opposite in the number 10 jersey was a player we haven't seen much in Super Rugby, and that was Auburn Ledger. Someone I've seen play very well for Counties Monaco, the Mitre 10 Cup, and play a bit for the Blues and the Chiefs. He paired with a new halfback in Luke Campbell who had a shocking start for his debut in the number 9 jersey, but made up for it later by scoring that try and a little bit of different plays around there. But I think he's got a future in Super Rugby. We just got to see how he grows and he flourishes. But Selesi Raiasi from the Auckland Mitre 10 Cup, he played a sensational game, and his experience in the Mitre 10 Cup I think is really showing. He's on a fast track to being the standout winger for the Hurricanes, I believe. And I think he pairs very well with Julian Sevilla. And obviously, you got the experience of Laumapi and Barrett. But I do want to talk about the forwards specifically. And we spoke about this previously off air, is Kane and Artie Sevilla, just the conversation around them. So obviously, both captains of their team, both incredible at what they do. And there's a big debate about who should receive the number 7 jersey for the ABs. And obviously, they play different roles for their Super Rugby teams. But James, I'm going to come to you with another two-part question. Who has a bigger impact for their team in your eyes out of Kane and Sevilla, and who's your form number 7?
Mate, Tom, I'm a very big Sam Kane fan, and I always kind of look at this from the perspective of a frustrated Wallabies fan about, like, who do we least want to line up against? And I say this many weeks, but like, Sam Kane is a proper nuisance, hugely influential, and like, Sevilla is an amazing player and a talent also, but I probably feel more comfortable with him at 7 rather than Sam Kane. So, like, without having watched every minute of Super Rugby and being able to comment on form one against the other, I think Sam Kane is New Zealand's best 7.
And Josh, I want to get your thoughts on this. Your thoughts on the number 7 jersey, or who has a bigger impact out of those two? What do you think?
Like, it's been a tough year with obviously Artie playing 8, but he's playing like a 7 as well. So obviously, you know, they're just playing 2 8s down at the Hurricanes, but they're a shambles. So he's doing so much. I mean, if he was able to replicate that work rate at the All Blacks level, and he's managed to do it this year largely. He's sort of had cramping issues in the past where he's hasn't really had them this year. So, you know, if he's able to replicate that work rate at All Blacks level, he's definitely the best 7 we've got. I think Sam Kane goes out of he just goes out of the picture too often. He can get stuck out on that edge and sort of out of the play for quite a bit of time. So I think Artie really gets there for me at the moment. But in saying that, we've got so many good 7s and loose forwards around at the moment. You could go with any combination.
It's ridiculous.
Just to sort of chuck a segue in there for you, I believe that Ian Foster and the All Blacks, they've made a mistake by naming a loose forward as captain, so especially so early in the piece. It's our most populated, talented area that we've got in New Zealand rugby at the moment. And by taking one space out permanently, It's a real point of debate over here. You know, you see Sam Kane's name there every week, obviously in the 7 jersey, and then so you've got to move Artie to 8, so then you miss out a talent like Hoskins Satutu, who's got to either sit on the bench or out of the squad, and then you've got players like Fitu Kamukamu Douglas from the Crusaders who just don't even get a look in because, you know, they're not there. Lachlan Boshier misses out, and he's probably never, ever going to get a spot because you've got Artie playing 8 and you've got Sam playing 7. I mean, we've just got so many good ones, but for me, Artie takes the cake over Sam, just on work rate and his influence on the game.
Yeah, no, I have somewhat of a same sentiment as you when it comes to the captaincy, because I could, in one state of mind, I can understand where Fozzie was trying to go. He's trying to find someone who has that All Blacks experience, who's been in the program and who can still have a bunch of longevity for the program. So they're trying to find someone that they can put in that position and just have in there for a few years, which is something that obviously is what you want. But I agree with a point where they could have gone in a few different other directions where they don't have to sacrifice such a pivotal position when it comes to selection all the time. So, yeah, we'll see when it comes to the end of that. I think everyone's still talking about even just last All Blacks games where so many people were trying to get looks, like you said. But, yeah, it's gonna be a rough All Blacks campaign for the last couple of years.
Yeah, because like obviously Richie McCaw was Richie McCaw. No one was ever going to be better than Richie McCaw. Like, he was the best. So he was clearly what we should have had at seven.
As and James labels him the cheat or some other.
But yeah, I believe that this issue with the Sam Cane thing is not the first time it's happened. And it's not going to be a popular opinion, but Kieran Reid shouldn't have been the New Zealand captain. You know, I thought there was times when there was way better number eights playing, but they couldn't get a look in because Kieran Reid was captain. And, you know, there was a lot of test matches there where he just didn't stand up, but you couldn't drop him because he is the captain. So, you know, you're never going to get it perfect, but probably loose forwards where we need to move away from, you know. I mean, there was a lot of whole other group of players that could have been selected. I mean, for me, a player like Scott Barrett or Sam Whitelock, even though he's kind of getting late in his career and probably on the
see, that's the person I was going to mention. It was like if you were looking at putting someone in captain, like Sam Whitelock would probably be the ideal candidate, because I think with Lock, you've got so many younger guys that you could probably throw in there that you could mix with Sam Whitelock to get them AB's experience. And I understand that Sam's getting up there in age and he's gotten a lot of test matches under his belt. But I guess who would you guys go if you wanted to pick captain? Like, let's just do a random segue. Just who would you pick if you had to pick the AB's captain?
It's got to be somebody like Josh mentions, who holds their spot comfortably. Mm-hmm. And there's just not that many positions where an All Black holds their spot comfortably. I think kind of Whitelock is the closest you've got. I guess that's really it.
Yeah.
And even like Aaron Smith and TJ Perenata, they're both awesome captains. They're great at what they do. But they're so interchangeable. They could both play week in, week out. So if you were to give it to one, you'll force your hand. You can't start the other. Mm-hmm. If you had asked me in 2020, 2019, 2020, I would have said Cody Taylor.
Oh, yeah.
But his discipline is out the
door.
It's
rubbish. Yeah.
You know, like, it's just like, mate, you just ruin your whole career because you're just going to get labeled a grub now. Same with Dane Coles. We'll never have him as captain. He's a grub. So, you know.
I think that's what I was thinking about like a few years ago. I was sitting there going, oh, yeah, Dane Coles, he sounds like he's a great leader. But as soon as he gets on the field, he just wants to get into a scrap or he just wants to do something that you look at him and just go, oh, man, yeah. So, I think Sam Whitelock would probably be your closest pick, but we got who we got. So we got to stick with him and we've got to ride it out. So, Fozzie.
You could also do the philosophy with the Australian cricket team where you pick your captain and as long as they're winning, you stick with that captain. And if it's a batsman, they can be getting ducks every week and contributing nothing to the game, but their leadership is enough to kind of get their selection.
Okay.
I don't think rugby is the same game where you can't kind of carry somebody who's, if there's a better, just for their leadership, if there's a better alternative. But
I don't know about that one.
Yeah.
That would be funny though.
I kind of like what the Chiefs and the Highlanders have done in the past with the co-captains. Like, you know, it gives you the ability to not play one that week and, hey, you're just the sole captain this week or put them on the bench. Hey, when you come on, he's going to go off, you're going to be captain. You know, like kind of give yourself a bit of option. I mean, you know, or maybe just not hold it in such regard. I mean, if you've got a vice captain, if you've got a leadership group, they should be able to lead. So instead of having one leader, it should be a group sort of taking the charge, as is becoming more happens more often now within professional teams, is that leadership group rather than that one figurehead person.
I think that's where the Hurricanes got it wrong, where they chose TJ and Dane Coles as both their co-captains, and both of them are just, they just never shut up. So yeah, but Hopefully Fozzie's listening and he can take your advice, but we'll talk about the last matchup that we just finished watching, and this matchup was the one that I was waiting to watch for all week. And I know, Josh, you don't want to talk about it, but we're going to get your opinion anyway. So we've got the Crusaders. They stay consistent week in, week out, and the Blues, they're a team that if they've got so much firepower at the moment that if you give them an inch, they take a mile. So I was nervous a little bit for the Crusaders. I don't know why, because when I heard they lost Christie, who's been such a great piece to their puzzle, I was sitting there going, okay, how are they going to react to that? But then I saw that the Blues had lost a little bit of depth as well. So their game was still very competitive. I really enjoyed it. But I want to talk about the Crusaders first. And one player I want to focus on is David Harvili. So he's a player that has suffered tremendous setbacks in his career due to injuries, health concerns, and New Zealand being so competitive, he's a guy that just has to compete week in, week out. But he's a guy who's able to be one of those marquee players of the Mitre 10 Cup through his gameplay with Tasman. And he's an important player for the Crusaders in their campaigns over the years. So I want to hear from both of you guys. You've obviously got guys like Laumapi, Goodhue, ALB, and a handful of other people who can contest for an AB's jersey. But considering Harvili can play 10 through 15, does he deserve to be in the AB's conversation? So, James, I'll come to you first. What is your thought on it?
If you're looking for a bench player for a test match, especially if you're trying to go 6-2, having somebody like Harvili who can cover every position and be quality, that's going to be something quite enticing, especially if that means you can kind of select one fewer back on the bench and one extra forward and take those advantages. I think it's really hard to separate Harvili from the quality that's inside and outside of him, and the opportunities he gets and the time and space and the defensive attention that Mwanga gets on his inside and that Goodhue and Jordan get on his outside. So these players have got a huge amount of gravity on the field, and I think Harvili has a lot of time and space and looks amazing off the back of that. So it's really hard. Like, I've never seen Harvili play on a weak side, so it's kind of hard to really assess him, but he certainly looks amazing, and today he was very good. And if you put him in an All Blacks jersey on the bench, I think he'd do a very good job.
Josh, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think he deserves a lot of credit. I mean, he's an excellent player. He's While, you know, Mwanga and Goodhue are on the inside and outside, they draw a lot of attention. So does he. So what they've got is they've got all these different points of importance to their backline that it always is going to leave a hole somewhere. I think there's an All Blacks jersey in him because Sevu Reese has just been, he's gone. Like, don't even pick him again because we don't pick drama queens. You know, like, there's literally...
That flop was horrendous. When I saw him flip over and he was just like, oh, me and the missus were both sitting on the bed watching the game going, like, you've got to get a card for flopping. That was just horrendous.
Yeah, definitely. We'll come back to that point later because I've got a lot to talk about on it. I think Harvili, he probably deserves an All Black spot over a couple of players that have been selected purely off form. I think Will Jordan's probably one that also deserves to be there. His ability to play 10 through 15, I bet you if you put him at 6 or 7, he'd be able to succeed as well. So, you know, I mean, he's just so versatile. He can kick, he can play, he can goal kick, you know, he can do everything on the field. And he just commands a lot of respect as well as a good leader of players as well. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's been hard done by. And like you mentioned, he's had a whole lot of injuries. And I think it's probably his time. If he can go through the season uninjured, he should be in a black jersey.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that raises an interesting question with the Sevu Reese conversation. I want to hear what you guys would think about your back three. So this can be a quick conversation. We don't get into too much, but Josh, I'll come back to you. If you were picking your back three for the ABs, who would you pick?
I think question first is Bowden Barrett available, or do we still think he's on sabbatical?
Nah, he's gone. He's gone. He's Leave gone. Him out. Yeah.
So then you've got to go Caleb Clark on your left wing. Mm-hmm. Will Jordan on your right wing and Jordy Barrett at the back.
Okay. All right. I like that. James, I'll give you a choice. You can either choose a back three for the All Blacks or a back three to compete against that one for the Wallabies.
So I've got the same back three, but I swap Barrett and Jordan. I have Jordan at fullback, but I think that's the same back three. In terms of a Wallabies back three, I think we give Vunivalu a jersey immediately, so he can't play for any other. You know how I feel about warehousing players.
Yeah, love it.
Mate, I think you can pick Vunivalu and Corabetti on two wings and maybe Hodge at fullback, so you've got a massive boot and you've got plenty of points in X Factor and you've got an exit kicker. So, yeah, I don't know how that goes in containing that All Blacks back three, but we're trying to be proactive and play footy, so that's what you do.
Yeah, I thought the warehouse was a popular store in New Zealand, not a policy that the Wallabies engaged in.
No. Throw them a quick Wallabies jersey early, and so he can't play for his country if birth.
Oh man, Josh, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, would you put Pataia and Paisami as your midfield? Because if you did, it would be one hell of a back line. And you know, while we have got a talented back three that. That I mentioned as well. I mean, that would be one hell of a backline that would be pretty hard to contain. You know, I mean, you've got a lot of, strong running, a lot of aerial game as well, and sort of our wingers can tend to struggle in the air. And I think, having someone like Vunivalu who can jump 2-3 meters in the air and collect the ball is going to be something that we're going to struggle to combat.
I personally wouldn't pick Pataia for my 13. I would pick probably one of the Brumbies centers in there, and I'd have Pataia come off the bench because he is a versatile player as well. He could slot in at 13. He could play on the wing, so it'd be something where it would be the same situation as Harvili, where you could have him as a utility back. But James, what do you reckon?
I think Pataia is pretty badly out of form at the moment, but I think he's the most talented and the most upside, and we're never going to kind of grind our way into a conservative win against an all-black side. We've got to have our best strike power there, and they've got to be on form. So on his best, Pataia offers a lot, and he plays well with Paisami, who's going to be a mainstay in the back line. So I don't know. I kind of want to see Pataia get consistent time and play his way into some form.
Interesting. Okay. All right, well, let's segue into our last conversation, and it's going to be a tough one for Josh, but he's going to have a lot of words for it. So we'll talk about the Blues. So I know how big of a Blues fan you are, is that we've gone to a lot of Auckland games and we've gone to a couple of Blues games together, and I know how passionate you get. But this one is going to be a very passionate one for you because it's a halfback debate, and they've got three talented halfbacks in Ruru, Christie and Nock, and there's been a lot of debate about who is the best person to fill that role. And I know you personally, you're not a big fan of the Ruru at nine. So who do you think is the best person to fill that number nine jersey? And let's take the Northland bias out of it. Okay, mate. So,
yeah. Oh, no, definitely. Definitely. I mean, I'm not going to bring bias into it at all just for you. but I think Sammy Nock does deserve that number one halfback spot for the Blues for whatever reason. I'm not too sure why he didn't play this weekend and why I was on the bench last weekend, but if you take last year's Mitre 10 Cup championship final into consideration, if we've got Sam Nock at halfback for Northland versus Hawke's Bay, Folau Fakatava doesn't have the same impact that he does. We had Will Grant, a young Australian halfback, starting for us, and unfortunately it was just a bridge too far for him. So I think, Nock's able to carry that kind of form across from Mitre 10 Cup into Super Rugby. And he's just so much better. I mean, he's a distributor. He's tough. He's like a Lucy, so he's good defensively. Whereas Ruru, while he's good defensively and he's tough, he's just erratic. Like the Blues were on the 10-meter line. They've just won a scrum penalty. The ball's popped out. Sorry, they've won a scrum advantage. Ball's popped out, and he throws an erratic out the backdoor pass, which slows everything down, and then there's an intercept. We come back for the penalty, but Caleb Clark's 10 meters free on the outside. Just simple hands. All he had to do was pass it, put a bit of effort into it. Ball gets out to him. We score a try. The Blues are now up by 9 points, I think it was at the time. But instead we lost a penalty, they ended up going down, they scored down the other end, and then we're on the back foot for the rest of the game. Finlay Christie, like, give him another 2 seasons of Super Rugby. He's an All Blacks contention. He's just so good. Like, you know, he's tough, he's fast, he's zippy around the ruck, but he also makes really good decisions. And, you know, like, he played a lot with Haveli at Tasman last season in the Mitre 10 Cup. So I think Ruru falls. He's definitely the third best halfback in the Blues at the moment. I don't know why. I can't come up with any reasons why he's getting the start over Christie or Nock so consistently. I know Finlay Christie has only just come back from injury, definitely need to be on the bench. But, you know, I would have had Nock starting today, especially against the Crusaders.
Might be that that Bronco time he ran in preseason, they might not be factoring that in, considering one the best Bronco time in the team. But no, I hear you on that one. It's, I think when you look at him, his consistency isn't on. He loves those flashy passes, and I think it's like 1 out of 10 that they come off good. So I've never really been a big fan of Ruru myself. I've said that to a few people, but some people don't like to agree with me on that one. But I've got a soft spot for Christie. I really like him. I think he provides a lot to this team, and I personally think the Blues really run very well with him. But that's not to say Sam Nock doesn't do the exact same. So I think they're neck and neck when it comes to it. I think when you've got Nock and you've got Christie as your 9 and backup 9, I think they're all over it. But yeah, Ruru plays that flashy university style of rugby. So yeah, there we go.
I wonder if they're just trying to get their return on investment on strapping tape, because, man, he has a lot of strapping tape on that knee. If he could tell me the last time he had a knee injury, that would be fantastic. Because
yeah, that would be good. It looks like he's got an ACL or an MCL every day or something. So yeah, who knows? Okay. Well, James, I'll give you the final word. Was there anyone in the Blues team that you were really crash hot about, or you enjoyed?
I think probably no one really particularly stood out. I thought their forward pack was much better in previous weeks. I've been raving about their pack in previous weeks, but I think they came up against the gold standard in the Crusaders. I think Ione, he was kind of quiet today, but I think he's looking more and more like a 13. Mm-hmm. I think that bodes well for All Blacks selection. And I think every week that I watch Ione at 13, I think he looks more and more comfortable there and he's making better decisions. And so I think that maybe plays into kind of All Black selection.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. As we've obviously spoken in previous weeks about just simple things that we need a 13 to do. He obviously provides a lot of athleticism and some amazing things that he can do in that position as opposed to a few other people. And I think he's starting to find his groove and he's getting that transition period. But yeah, as long as he stays consistent, I'm happy with it. If he doesn't, push him out to the wing. I don't want him involved in that 13 jersey. But good stuff today, boys. It was a good game of rugby, good weekend of rugby. Josh, thank you for joining us tonight. I appreciate you filling in for Hulla. It was good to see you. But James, I'll come to you first. Any final words from the rugby or anything happening cool in Sydney at the moment?
Mate, the Sydney's in the midst of like a 1 in 100 year rain event. So a year after the bushfires, Sydney is absolutely flooded, and rugby only happened. We're supposed to have our first trials on Saturday, yesterday, and rugby only happened on the Randwick training field, which is turf. And the grass field in Sydney has been shut, and we're expecting another 10 days of rain or something. So, that's Australia for you when it's not a once in a century bushfire and drought. The next year is a flood, so that's where we're going.
Well, man, safety to you and your family, and I guess you go build an ark then, so you can just prepare for the worst.
I got a snorkel to get home.
Oh, that'll be good. And Josh, thank you for joining us again. I just want to give you the final word because you're our guest. So, any final words from the beautiful Northland?
No, it's blue skies here, so don't want to skide or anything.
Rub it in, salt in the wounds.
Thanks for having me on. It's been really cool. I mean, TJ was a guest on a podcast that I was doing during the pandemic last year, so it's really cool to jump on yours and talk code, because you know we all love talking code. So I'd love to come on again in the future, and I love to keep in touch and watch what you guys are up to. So. Cheers for having me on.
We'll definitely have you back. You provide some great chat, and it'll be good to catch up more and more. So, yeah, thank you everyone for tuning into the Bonus Point Podcast today. I see some good chat on the Facebook group, so keep that one up. It's pretty funny. But don't forget to check out our Major League Rugby episode this Monday at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time in California. Major League Rugby has kicked off, so super excited for that one. But we will see you all next week for the recap of all our Super Rugby. Thank you for tuning in, and have a good evening.
See you, mate.
See you, team.